Every Sunday, Elise Glink is live and new to guide you through your money and real estate questions. Only on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSV.
Hey everybody, Happy New Year. I'm not in today, but here's a replay of a tax show we did earlier in the week. Hope you enjoy it and have a wonderful 2012. It's 7 minutes past the hour. I'm Elise Glink. Thanks for joining us today. Sitting in for Clark today and tomorrow. Hope that we can get out some great information for you. Our number 404-872-0750. Online all the time. My website is thinkglink.com. thinkglink.com. Don't forget to sign up for my free weekly newsletter when you're on thinklink.com, or you can hang out with me online. Right now I've been tweeting. My Twitter handle is @ Glink, G-L-I-N-K. And I just tweeted that today I'm coming on the show to answer your tax and real estate questions. And you can line up now. Oh, people already are. 404-872-0750. But because it's the end of the year, and very excited to join you as we count our way down to 2012, I thought I would get a little bit of help here. Now, something that we do regularly on the Elise Glink Show, three or four times a year, is we have some friends of mine, Bill Nemeth and Mary Brody, who are enrolled agents. And enrolled agents are tax practitioners who are licensed to represent taxpayers before the IRS. And their website is the number 4GAEA.org. They're members of the Georgia Association of Enrolled Agents. On ThinkLink and at the Elise Glink Show and at our different events that we've had, we've invited Bill and Mary and some of the other enrolled agents from Georgia to join us on air to answer your tax questions. And because we are winding our way down to the end of another year together, I think I've been filling in for Clark now. This is the end of maybe year 14. Ooh, we're going to hit a milestone year in 2012. I asked Bill and Mary to join me online here for the first time to answer your questions and to talk about some things that you can do over the next few days before we end the year that are going to make, that will make it so much easier for you when you're putting together your taxes come either March 15th if you're an employer, or April 15th if you're just sort of an employee or a citizen, you know, whatever. And so we wanted to get a chance to have that conversation. And then the second hour of the show, we're going to talk about the economy and what's going on. There's been, given that this is the week it's been, there's been a relatively large amount of business news going on. There's a lot going on in Europe. So next hour, we're going to sit and talk about all of that and answer more of your real estate questions and comments on the economy. So let me give the number out, 404-872-0750. Bill Nemeth, Mary Brody, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
It's very nice to have you guys here. So let's kick this off with a couple of things that somebody might want to do before the end of the year. I know that we talk often about putting away money for your retirement, and that helps you now because it reduces your income that you'll be paying taxes on in April, but it also helps you for the future. So what are some options that people have?
Well, the 401k and your 403b contributions, if you could max those out before the end of the year, might be kind of difficult unless you own your own business and then you have complete control over what you put in. Simple plans should also be maxed out. And don't forget the HSA contribution. That's the health savings account. That should be maxed out too.
Yeah, that's actually a really big one because that you need to put money away, but don't you also need to spend it this year? Or is that the cafeteria plan?
That's the cafeteria plan. Thankfully, with the HSA, you can just keep dropping money into it year after year after year. Anything that comes back out as payment of expenses is all it's not tax-free. It's all tax-free. And but you can, it's a basic savings account.
And then the cafeteria plan, that's use it or lose it by the end of the year, right?
That's right. That's okay. Right.
So what about other kinds of ways that you might be able to put things away? What about a Roth IRA?
Certainly, a Roth IRA is always a good idea. However, it doesn't have any impact on your taxes. You're not going to reduce your taxable income, but you are putting money away, and it stays and grows tax-free. And it has a benefit that you don't ever have to take it out. You can will that to your heirs without any tax consequences.
It's really actually one of the best benefits of a Roth IRA, I think, is that you get to, it's $5,000 if you're 50 or under that you get to put away, an extra $1,000 if you're above that. And then the pass-down provisions are terrific.
Uh-huh.
Absolutely.
All right. What else might somebody be able to do? What about a regular IRA?
Certainly, a regular IRA. You have until April 17th of the coming year to contribute to a traditional IRA. If you choose to get an extension, then you can then extend that until October 17th. And that is going to do two things. One, it puts the money away so it grows tax-free. And number two, it is going to improve your tax situation. You will have to pay less tax today.
And what's the limit on that this year?
It has not changed for a number of years. It's $5,000 if you're 50 or below. If you're over 50, it's $1,000 more or $6,000.
Great. So there's some different ways that people can do things. Do you need to open up the Roth IRA by the end of the year?
No, you can wait until April 15th to open either a Roth or a traditional IRA. And some people get caught. Their income is too high. They've made a traditional IRA contribution, and now it's not deductible or not. You can't make it at all. So they switch it to a Roth.
Okay. But there are some things that you do need to do before the end of the year. So one thing that I always talk about is making an extra mortgage payment, getting your January payment with the interest in. Why would somebody want to do that?
Because it should increase the amount of interest deduction that you would receive for the year. It also pays down the principal, which is a great thing. But another tax-saving thing you can do before the end of the year, certainly, is a charitable contribution. And a nice way to handle that is with a credit card, because you can make that online payment to your local charity or your favorite charity. And as long as it's charged to your credit card by December the 31st, you still get the deduction, even if you don't actually pay it until January.
That's actually really, really nice. What are the who gets to deduct? And I think there's always some confusion around this. What is the standard deduction, and who benefits above that?
Standard deduction went up a little bit this year. Married filing jointly is $11,600. Single people are half that, or $5,800. And the people that will benefit from the standard deductions are the people that are newly entering the workforce. They're out on their own. They don't own a home. They can't do a Schedule A with itemized deductions. So those are very handsome numbers. Also, at the other end of the spectrum, if you talk about the empty nesters who have paid down their houses, they may not be able to itemize unless they're very charitable or live in an area that has exceptionally high property taxes, because it's hard to get over these limits of $11,600.
On the other hand, it's not as though the seniors are going to have a whole lot of interest income this year.
That is true.
Again, for like the fourth or fifth year in a row. I keep hearing about this. There was a great comment online when they announced that inflation had stayed really modest, and they said, yeah, okay, inflation's like 2%, but we're only getting about 0.5% on our money. You know, we're getting killed.
Yeah, absolutely.
Basically. All right, well, let's go to the phones. We are talking with Bill Nemeth. He's president of the Georgia Association of Enrolled Agents, number 4GAEA.org, and Mary Brody, also an enrolled agent. Both of them have loads of experience doing taxes. Let's see if they can help you out. Lee joins us on the line from Smyrna. Hi, Lee. Welcome to the show. How are you? Happy New Year, sir.
Happy New Year to you, ma'am.
Thank you. What's on your mind?
We'll be 70 and a half in 2012. And as I understand it, I'm required to start taking deductions from a 401k.
Yes.
My question is, how much do I have to take, and what can I do? I don't need the money.
Are you still working?
No.
Okay, so you're retired. So have you transferred your 401k to an IRA?
No.
Or you just left it in the 401k?
Yes.
So you want to know how much you have to take and anything
yes.
else?
I'm sorry?
Anything else, or just how much you have to take?
Well, I might have when you tell me, I might ask another question.
All right, well, let's get to the first one. Bill and Mary?
Believe it or not, the IRS has made this rather complex. The first question, are you currently married?
Yes.
Is your wife 10 years or more younger than you are?
No, sir.
Okay. So that got us into the right table. Isn't this wonderful? It turns out the first year is, well, every year is based on your life expectancy. If you do the math, you're going to have to pull out 3.65% of the total value of your of your 401k at the end of 2011. And so
2011 or 2012? He turned 70 and a half next year.
You would count it as of
the end of 2011. Okay.
And it's always the year before, the December 31st, the year before. Now, because he turned 70 and a half in 2012, he actually does not have to make that distribution to himself until April 15th of 2013. But that just means that he's delayed it, because in 2013, you'd end up taking the one for 2012 and the one for 2013.
All right, Lee, how's that for a complicated answer? I got to tell you, Bill's got a few years on you, I think.
I hope so.
All right, well, let's see if we can just, I'll sort of summarize again for you. If you are married but your wife is not more than 10 years younger than you, you will have to withdraw 3.65% of the total value of your 401k at the end of 2011, but you don't have to do it until 2012. And I think, if I understood correctly, that you do have an option of waiting until April of 2013, but you're going to then have to take out two distributions in 2012 and 2013. So, Lee, beyond that, you probably want to talk to your tax preparer and figure out what you can do to maybe offset or do something else with the money that you're taking out and don't need to live, which is a nice place to be. 18 minutes past the hour. Let's see if we can get another quick call in. Michael joins us on the line from Canton. Hi, Michael. What's your question?
Hi. Good afternoon. I have successfully modified my first and second mortgages, which are through the same company.
Mm-hmm.
And my third mortgage provider had a line of credit that I had used. I was going to negotiate with them because I had the goal of staying in my home, and they offered me the option to write off the amount of $76,000. Not to pay that back and to forgive that debt.
Mm-hmm.
And my question is, what are my tax responsibilities if I end up taking their offer? And is that considered income, or do I have to pay tax on that for 2012?
Is this your primary residence we're talking about?
It is.
Okay, and you still live there?
I do, and I'm in good standing with my first and second lines of credit, or my first mortgage and second.
Well, we might actually have a little delayed Christmas present for you. Bill, Mary, who wants to take this one?
I'll try to address it. The bottom line is, from 2007 to 2012, the tax laws are such that if you're in your primary residence and you have the situation you have where you've had a cancellation of debt, typically, that was taxable income, or phantom income, as people refer to it. During that time frame, if it's on your principal home, that amount of money is not taxable to you for that span from 2007 to 2012. So that's where Elise gets the delayed Christmas present.
Wow, that's great news. But I was very surprised that they offered it, and they didn't even. I was going to modify and get my interest rate down and try to, resolve that, but they wanted to settle, and so they forgave it, and that's, I think, what I'll plan on doing.
Well, you should definitely do that, but a couple of things to keep in mind. So if they're going to forgive it, you want truly something in writing that says, we're forgiving this and we're not going to resell it to a collector who's going to then come after you. Right? So we want a true, all is forgiven, nobody's ever coming after you, this is the end, finito, done. Just make
my
sure.
My attorney's looked at it, and it's legitimate, and everything's correct. I just didn't know the tax implications.
Yeah, I would say to you that one reason that they may be so eager to do this is that they're actually getting a decent-sized payout. You don't owe that much, $7,600. They're getting
$76,000.
$76,000.
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, that's a lot more. They're not getting that much. But they must have another reason for getting this off the books. So lucky you.
Yeah.
Lucky you, because they're not getting that much money from the government for that.
Right.
And take it and run for the hills. And I'm so, so glad that you have an attorney who is looking at this paperwork, because my husband Sam, who's a real estate attorney, and I have started to get a lot of emails from people who were not reading their paperwork carefully, and they thought that these loans had been forgiven, and yet now they're coming back with collectors. We're talking tax this hour. I'm so glad you guys could join us today. I'm Elise Glink, sitting here with Bill Nemeth and Mary Brody, enrolled agents who are answering your questions at 404-872-0750. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more on News Talk WSB.
Expert money advice you can depend on. Weekdays with Clark Howard and Dave Ramsey. And midday every Sunday with Elise Glink on AM 750. And now, 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
56 minutes past the hour, so my husband Sam was listening to the show when I was talking about the different passwords. And remember I said I didn't know what QWASCSZX are? And he said, passwords, you know, of course, it's the first two keys from the top to bottom on the left side of the keyboard. And I looked at it, and it's like, oh, QWASZX. So you know how QWERTY, QWERTY, which is the top whole thing? This is just, you know, QW, second line, AS, and then SZX. I looked at it differently. Okay. Thank you, Sam, for figuring that out. Really appreciate it. 404-872-0750. I do not have the mind of a criminal, I got to just say. I do not have the mind of a criminal. You know, before we get to this last call, I just want to say a big thank you to all of our listeners here at WSB. It has been such a remarkable year. It's been a remarkable 5 years, but 2011 has just got to go down in the years being one of the most remarkable that I can remember in the 14-odd years that I've been working at WSB. And just so you know, I have so much support behind the scenes, and so I really want to recognize Alan Hunt, who is the guy who's running the board today. He's just an amazing man. So great to have him on board. And then Crystal Wheeler, our executive producer for the Sunday show, but she's also here answering your calls today. She's the one who makes ThinkLink happen with respect to what's going on with WSB. And there are just other amazing people who participate behind the scenes, like Fred, and Clint was around for a long time, and Eric was around before Clint, and you're just people who make this show happen. And so I just have, you know, for all of Clark's staff as well, you know, Krista, and you've got Kim, everybody who just put so much effort into getting you this information, just a big thank you from me to them for allowing me to come on and be a part of this show. I just love it, and I love doing the Sunday show as well. And thank you for making it sound as good as you do, because that's how all of us work in radio. You know, we only sound as good as the people who are behind us. And at WSB, there are just absolutely amazing people who are here making this show happen. So a big Happy New Year to everybody, and a thank you for the year that we've had. I hope you'll join us on Sundays, 11 to 1. I'll be back to fill in for Clark, I hope, early in the year. In the meantime, he'll be back tomorrow. You know what we have tomorrow? We've got football. No, not football. Basketball. Alan C., saving me again. Basketball tomorrow at 1:30. So Clark will be back, though, next week after the holiday. We've got Sean Hannity next. Again, big Happy New Year. I hope that 2012 brings you everything that you desire. See you soon, guys.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinklink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB. What do you want from me?
Welcome back, everybody, to the Clark Howard Show. I'm Elise Blank, sitting in for Clark today and tomorrow, and I have some guests with me today. I have Mary Brody and Bill Nemeth. They are enrolled agents, licensed to represent taxpayers before the IRS. They sit with me a few times a year on the ThinkLink Show on Sunday, and I invited them to come on today to help answer your tax questions before the end of the year. Now, Bill sent me, he always keeps me up to date on all the really cool things going on, and so the other day, he sent me recession tax law changes, which I'm going to have put up on ThinkLink as a blog post for today's show notes. But I wanted to just, before we jump into your calls, run down quickly all of the tax law changes that we've seen, the big ones, since 2008 when the recession started. And I'm going to go with, he sent them to me the most current first. The 2012 payroll tax holiday now through February of 2012. You pay 2% less in Social Security tax. That was the on the heels of the 2011 payroll tax holiday, same thing. 2009 and 2010, we had the Making Work Pay Credit, Schedule M, $400 or $800. In 2010, you had Hiring Incentives to Restore Employment, the HIRE Act. 2008 to 2012, the American Opportunity Credit, up to $2,500 per student, partially refundable. 2009 saw the Cash for Clunkers program, the first-time homebuyer credit, the $8,000 refundable credit, the first-time homebuyer credit that was the $7,500 0% loan. And then in 2008, we saw, that was the first-time homebuyer credit loan, and we also had the bonus depreciation for the equipment that was purchased new, the expanded Section 179 depreciation. We saw the suspend required minimum distributions on retirement plans. That was in 2009. You didn't have to do that. 2008 had the five-year, what's NLL bill?
It's a business thing.
Oh, the business thing, right. Carry back. The 2008, I can't believe all of these tax laws. We were so busy back then talking about all this stuff. This year seemed like, you know, a nothing, like, you know, hardly anything this year we had one. And I'm not even done with your list. The 2008 child tax credit threshold was reduced from $12,050 to $8,500. And then we had the child tax credit threshold reduced to $3,000. We had the earned income, expanded earned income credit for up to three kids from 2009 to 2012. Then we had the now extended through 2012, the foreclosure of taxpayers' primary residence, taxability of forgiven debt suspended. And finally, the stimulus payment. Does anybody even remember this? 2008? Sent out to taxpayers who filed 2007 returns. It was $300 to $2,400, depending on the income and the number of dependents. I think I got nothing, but... Anyway, more for everybody else. So that is, and you guys have done this a long, long time. Have you ever, do you ever remember a five-year period where so much significant tax legislation was passed?
Never. Never. We still have people wandering in asking about the, when am I going to get my check over the summer? And that relates, you know, 5 years ago. They're still remembering this.
I guess it was notable. I'm not sure it worked all that well, but, you know, it certainly made a lot of work for everybody else. All right, let's see if we can get a couple of questions in here. Andrea joins us on the line from Marietta. Hi, Andrea. What's your tax question?
Yes, I have a question about transferring money from abroad. I have a savings account at home back in my home country, and I transferred some money over this year. How do I declare that, and where do I put it on my income tax statement?
Well, bottom line, if it was money that you earned in a foreign country and have already paid tax on it there before you were in the United States, and all you're doing is transferring it, there's really no tax implication of
right,
that.
Right, but I probably have to mention it somewhere, right?
No, there's no place on a tax form or tax return for a transfer of money that's already had tax paid on it. I don't want to,
okay,
you know, misguide you and
no,
say...
No, that's not...
Yeah.
That's correct.
But,
yeah,
but
so
there is... There
and
is,
I couldn't find any. That's why I called you.
Right. Well, there is a form. It's called an FBAR. It's an acronym, obviously, and it's for people who have foreign accounts, such as savings accounts, checking accounts, retirement accounts.
Mm-hmm.
These are all supposed to be reported every single year to the IRS on this FBAR form. And, you know, seek out
Frank
Baby,
uh-huh,
Apple, Rita, I don't know. I'm sure that's all wrong, according to the Airline Association, but... They have their own thing.
It's really foreign bank account report.
There you go.
FBAR.
It's not easy to find in the system. It does. You don't get it with your 1040 package, but if you have at least $10,000 of money, $10,000 of U.S. money equivalent sitting in a foreign account, and you're in the United States and you're filing a tax return in the United States, you absolutely need to be filing this form. And there are now severe penalties for not getting that form filed on time.
So you're, well, I'm glad I called.
So this form is really just to let them know that you have accounts that are of more than $10,000 abroad. Or is it a total of $10,000?
It's per account.
Okay.
Okay.
So
okay.
You file it. If you have five accounts, you file five of these.
Well, they can all be listed on the same
form. You file it with your tax return, or you just file it at the end of the year?
It's an independent tax filing. It's an independent form.
All right.
It's due in June of 2012, and it's information only. You will not pay any tax with that information return. You're just telling the IRS where your dollars are.
Okay. Sounds great.
Perfect. Andrea, thank you so much. Happy New Year.
Thank you very much. Happy New Year. Bye-bye.
You're welcome. 42 minutes past the hour. I'm Elise Kling, 404-872-0750. Kevin joins us on the line from Loganville. Hi, Kevin.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What's your tax question?
I'm a college student, so I don't really have too much expertise. I'm helping a friend of mine start a nonprofit, and she just got her 501c3 a month ago. But when we got the information, they backdated the information to the begin time of the nonprofit to 2009. And unfortunately, she didn't really keep good records from then until now, and I'm trying to help her with that. But there's no real evidence of any money being moved anywhere. I'm just worried about, the tax implications for that. Like, if we get audited, is there anything that we can do to kind of have proof that we've been doing works in that time period?
I'd like to address that. Congratulations on getting the 501c3 status.
Thank you very much.
A question, how much money did the charity raise each year? Was it over $25,000?
I do not believe so.
Okay.
And I'm the secretary, I would have to ask her, but I believe it's under that.
Okay, here's the deal. If it's under $25,000, you actually have a postcard tax return to file for a nonprofit. And the good news is, of a nonprofit, there is no tax liability.
Right.
It's merely a reporting requirement.
Okay.
And so I would advocate that you sit down and go through the 990s for the particular kind of charity you are and file them back to when you guys were deemed to be a charity, which sounds like it's going to be 2009. When you send those in, you'll get a dunning letter from the IRS saying you're late, you're going to have to pay penalties. It's a first-time offense. You just write them a polite letter stating that because of the circumstances, you were unaware of the filing requirement and you'd like to have the penalties waived, and life will go on very nicely.
Okay. Well, that's thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
You're welcome. Happy New Year. 45 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. Let's continue on with the calls. Tad joins us on the line from Atlanta. Hi, Tad. Happy New Year. What's your tax question? Tad, you with us? Maybe not. Let's try Tiffany. Tiffany, you there?
Yes. Hello?
Hi, Tiffany. Welcome to the Clark Howard Show. What's your tax question?
Yes, I have my mother staying with me. She gets, I guess, disability, and so she started staying with me, I guess, at the beginning of the year, and so she's just been helping me out, I guess. But I didn't know she files taxes to say that, she's been giving me money, or do when I file my taxes, do I have to put the money that she gave me? Because it came up to about, I guess, $6,000 is how much she's probably given me for the year.
But she's living with you, right? She's living with you?
Yeah, she's living with me. So I'm taking care of her and, so.
So you're taking care of her and she could be considered to be paying rent or just contributing to the household. Bill and Mary, how would this change the tax situation?
Okay, we'll start out with mom's income, which each person is responsible for their own return. If all she's getting is about $6,000 of Social Security, she has no requirement to file a return. If she is allowed to be a dependent on the daughter's return, the daughter then can take benefits for any medical expenses that she's paying for her mom that aren't covered by insurance and so on. So on the face of it, it sounds like she can take mom as a dependent. The money that mom is giving her is not going to affect her tax return at all.
All right, Tiffany.
Okay.
Tiffany, how does that sound?
That sounds really good. I guess I can just go about and just file it, I guess, as her being a dependent man, since I'm helping her.
Well, that's right. Do you normally file your own taxes?
Yes, I do. Uh-huh.
And do you use a tax program like TurboTax?
I just go through the IRS website, and they'll just give me like a tax code or like a tax program in Big Fun.
Sounds good.
So I think it's, what is it?
I think what you're talking about is you're going to one of the free file programs through the IRS.gov website, and what you'll find when you go through that is with your mom living with you, your filing status will become, if you're not married, it will be head of household. If you're married, it will just have one more dependent on your return.
Oh, okay. Okay, then. Well, that cleared up a lot.
Good. We're so glad. Thank you so much for your call. And if you have more questions when you're filing in April, Bill and Mary will be back on my show on Sunday mornings.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks very much. It is 48 minutes past the hour. Sandy joins us on the line. Hey, Sandy, what's your tax question?
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. Happy New Year.
Same to you. If you were planning, and I apologize for leading the witness, but I really don't really know the correct way to ask this question. If you're planning ahead for, say, you want to put some money in IRA, 401k, and you're not sure of the specific vehicle, then the purpose of it is not only for the tax stuff this year, but in the future, you're looking towards using that money for either buying a house or starting a business. Primarily, number one would be starting a business. What sort of a vehicle could you, tax vehicle could you use to, like, put the money in now, but then later take it out to do that, or can you?
For a tax, for taking money out of a retirement plan before you're 59 and a half to start a business, there's really no tax break for that. You'd end up paying tax on the money, and you would end up paying a 10% penalty for taking it out before you hit 59 and a half. Now, there's
buying a house.
Buying a house is different. Bill, is it 401k or?
Yeah, there are some requirements. You can have a withdrawal of up to $10,000 for a first-time home buyer, where that's defined as you haven't had a major home yourself in the last 2 years. But there's some real tricky timing. You've got to pull the money out within 60 days of closing. And all that allows you to do is pull the money out without paying a penalty. It is still taxable income.
Okay.
So, you know, you might be better off just establishing a bank account or a brokerage account and, you know, find some safe stocks that are yielding 5% dividends these days and just let it sit there and grow and pay the tax on it.
There's one possibility, though. What about using a Roth IRA where you can actually withdraw contributions after, what, 5 years?
5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly
so,
Roth would be, if her time frame is that long, that would work out perfectly.
So, Sandy, you could put in $5,000 a year. But you can't take out those contributions, and you can't take out the any earned income until you're 59 and a half without paying all kinds of penalties. But you can't touch the contributions for 5 years. So does that work with your time frame?
Well, you know, that all depends on the economy. That's what I'm worried about.
So there you go. But that is one possibility. And the nice thing there is that if you end up getting other funds to grow the business, then what you've done is fund a really nice retirement for yourself. And we always like that. 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Kling, sitting here with Bill and Mary, our enrolled agents tax specialists. We'll be right back to answer more of your questions next on Newstalk WSB.
Every Sunday, Elise Glink is live and new to guide you through your money and real estate questions only on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Everybody, I'm Elise Lane, sitting in for Clark today. 404-872-0750. We're answering your tax questions. My tax helpers, or I should say my tax elves, are Bill Nemeth and Mary Brody, who sit in with me often on the Elise Kling Show on Sunday mornings, and we brought them here so that you could get some of the benefit of their wisdom just before the end of the year. They're both enrolled agents, licensed to represent taxpayers before the IRS. The website is 4GAEA.org, the Georgia Association of Enrolled Agents. Albert joins us on the line. Hi, Albert. Albert, welcome to the Clark Howard Show. What's your tax question?
Thank you, ma'am. I sold a property in Germany, and I made $75,000. Do I need to pay tax when I bring the money over, or do I have to pay tax before I bring it over?
Okay. Bill and Mary, you sell property abroad, in this case Germany. He made $75,000. Albert, are you a U.S. citizen?
Yes.
And do you live in the U.S.?
Yes.
And you just, that is this property that you purchased or you were inherited, you were given?
No, I went to partnership with one of my friends over there, and we made the money.
Okay. Bill and Mary, what advice do you have for Albert?
Okay, typically U.S. law says that U.S. citizens living in the United States will report their worldwide income, so certainly that would be a taxable gain. It sounds like it's going to be a long-term gain because it was investment property, so he may end up either paying 0% tax or 15% maximum capital gains tax in the year he sold it.
Which is nice. So, Albert, you probably want to go talk to your tax professional. It sounds like you might get a little late Christmas present as well. 28 minutes past the hour. We are talking tax on the Clark Howard Show. Stay tuned. I'm Elise Klink. We'll be right back with more on News Talk WSB.
Expert money advice you can depend on. Weekdays with Clark Howard and Dave Ramsey. And midday every Sunday with Elise Glink on AM 750. And now, 95.5 FM. News Talk WSB.
Hey, everybody. Happy New Year. I'm not in today, but here's a replay of a tax show we did earlier in the week. Hope you enjoy it and have a wonderful 2012. 6 minutes past the hour on the Clark Howard Show. I'm Elise Klink sitting in for Clark today. So glad you could join us as we wind our way down to the end of the year. I don't know about you, but my favorite month of the year is January because anything is possible. And after a whole bunch of years of recession and feeling like we're still in a recession, it's nice to actually start to think about a whole new year and the opportunities that it brings. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. The last couple of days, Challenger Gray and Christmas has held their annual Let Us Help You Get a Job days. It was Tuesday and Wednesday of this year. And they issued a survey about all the different people who called in. They're a Chicago-based outplacement firm, but they're work worldwide. And they sent out this press release saying that in the survey they took, nearly half of people who called their helpline had been out of work for more than a year, which is really a huge amount of time in the unemployment rails. What they said, though, on the more positive side, is that the people who did call into the annual job search hotline were more optimistic than a year ago. So nearly 30% estimated they'd find a job within 3 months. A year ago, just 18% said that, in 2010. But also surging is the number of people who thought it might take more than a year to find employment. So 10% of the job seekers who called the hotline thought the search would last more than 12 months. A year ago, just 4% said they thought it would be a prolonged search. There were more than 600 calls to the job search advice hotline. They helped more than 1,000 job seekers, 77% who were unemployed. It's down just slightly from the previous two years. But according to John Challenger, who runs the firm, he said there's a lot more uncertainty. The percentage of callers expecting the job search to last 7 to 9 months increased from 6% a year ago to 14% this year. Overall, 65% of people who called said they'd find a job in 6 months or less, and he thought that that was a pretty realistic assessment. In a healthy economy, a successful job search might take 2 to 3 months. In a tight job market, such as the one we're in now, he said it's not unusual to see even high-quality candidates take 4 to 6 months to find the right job. For the unemployed callers, almost 40% have been out of work for 1 to 6 months. Another 14% have been jobless for 7 to 12 months. 50% of those who called had been jobless for a year or more, and 60% of that group had been out of work for 2 years or longer. Really tough stuff. So let's hope that 2012 is going to turn things around and help us create something much more interesting. The Bureau of Labor Statistics showed that employers nationwide hired over 4 million new workers in October. There were still another 3.3 million job openings at the end of the month. Employers have been hiring about 4 million new workers per month for several months. But a lot of these hires are replacing retirees or former workers who have quit, and there are a lot of jobs that are still being lost. And so there are people getting hired, people getting fired. At least something's happening out there. So we'll watch these numbers as the year goes on, and we'll talk more about it on my Sunday show. If you don't listen to the show, we're on every Sunday morning, 11 to 1, here on News Talk WSB. All right, let's go back to the phones, 404-872-0750. Let me get my technology working. Here we go. Don joins us on the line from Norcross. Hi, Don. Welcome to the Clark Howard Show.
Hi, Elise. How are you? Thanks for taking my call.
I'm great, thanks. Happy New Year.
Same to you. Thanks.
Thank you. What's on your mind?
Got a quick question. I'm a landlord, and I've experienced something that, for the first time earlier this year, due to the economy, some of my tenants lost their jobs, and they were not able to pay. Some of them have left without paying me what they do. So I'm trying to figure out what is the best way to go after some of these people so they can pay me what they owe me.
Well, in some ways, I think this might be a wasted effort on your part.
Okay.
Because if they've lost their job and they're living on unemployment, they probably don't have any money, right?
Okay.
I'm sure they didn't want to leave your place, right? I'm sure it's a nice place to live. They just couldn't afford it, and they left. So if you chase them, I assume you had a month of rent from them, you know, held in advance, right, as a security deposit?
Yes.
So
I know at least of one case where the individual is working now.
Okay. And how much do they owe you, 1 month's rent?
They owe me about 3 months' rent.
Okay, so you let them keep staying there even though they couldn't pay you?
Right. They were paying me partially is what happened while they were trying to rearrange things and survive, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And I told them that I let them stay there until they found another job, and then they can slowly make up what they owed me.
Okay.
But then they moved out, and then they didn't pay me at all.
Well, if you know where they're working, you can always you could go to court, and you could sue them for the missing money, and you could ask a judge to impose something so that their pay would get a part of their pay would be taken away, right? You can try that. You're going to have court costs and legal fees associated with it, and then you're going to have to collect it and get the company to work with you.
Okay.
So how much do they actually owe you? Because that process could cost you several thousand dollars.
Okay. Well, one of them owes me a little bit over close to $4,000.
Okay. So you could go to small claims court and work the system yourself and see how that goes and how much time it takes and if you're able to actually get anything. And maybe there'll be just the thought of having to go to court and show up. Maybe that'll scare them into actually paying you something. And maybe you can just arrange a settlement where, you know, they say, well, I can give you $2,000, and you say, fine, I'll take it.
Right.
So, small claims court is a good place to try. They're pretty nice there about helping people through the system. I personally haven't done it, but I know people who have. And that would be a place to go.
Now
the problem is if you have tenants that you don't know where they are and they may have left the state, it makes it a lot harder.
Okay.
So you can try to look online to see if you can find them. You can go to their Facebook pages and see if you can track them that way.
Okay.
And then you can try and figure out where they're living. But if they don't have a job, I don't know what you're going to get out of it other than just getting it on, you know, paper in court that they owe you money. And so if you have the time and you don't mind doing this, you can go ahead and try.
Okay, excellent. I guess the second part of my question was, do you know any methods of how to get more information of where they live? Is it possible I can get the courts maybe to ask the post office for their address or something like that, of that nature?
You know, you can try, but typically I think Facebook is sort of the best, is a great, easy way.
Okay.
And then you can try, if you have a cell phone number that's still working, you can try to track it back through the cell phone number. You can get the ask the courts to get ask the cell phone company to release information to you.
Okay.
I don't know if they will, but there are different ways to go about in tracking them down. Do they each owe you that much money? Does everybody owe you $4,000?
No. Well, I've got one of them that owes me quite a bit.
Okay. Well, it's if you're owed a significant amount of money, it's worth going to court, small claims court. And you have the time, doing it yourself, and trying to get back. It sounds like you were trying to be a good guy.
I did.
And they just stepped on you, and that's really awful because there aren't enough good guys in this world.
That's correct.
and I don't blame you for being upset and mad. I don't want you to do is just waste a whole lot of time that you may or may not have to end up getting nothing. But if you have the time and you're willing to do it, small claims court, try it out.
You bet. I appreciate your help, and keep up the good work, and long-time listener.
Thank you, Don. I appreciate that. Happy New Year.
You too.
Thank you.
Bye.
15 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. Let's continue on with our calls. Mike joins us on the line from Flowery Branch. Hey, Mike.
Hey. I just got a quick question. I bought a owner finance property with a homeowner. And we closed on it probably last year with a $5,000 close to the lawyer. So the place is in my name, but the old owner is a like the lien holder, like a bank would be if you went to a bank.
Okay.
And he called me up and said he was going to send me a 1099, and I was trying to figure out how I could get a 1099 off of it.
You want the 1099, or he's sending you a 1099 and you don't know why?
Yeah, he's sending me a 1099, and I don't know why.
He's sending you a 1099 because you've paid him, I assume, interest on the money.
Okay.
And he's sending you a 1099 that shows that you've paid that, so that you can turn around and use it for your taxes, is my guess, if that's really what he's sending you. So this is kind of a good thing, right? Because you want to show the IRS that you've made payments on a loan. And this should show that.
Okay, that clears it up a little bit better, because I thought it was 1099 me for the bad part of it.
I don't think so. I mean, I guess I don't really know. But if you had closing costs, right, those may be deductible in the year of purchase. And so he may be sending that to you and with the interest as well. It sounds like he actually has somebody who knows something about taxes who's helping him out. And he's getting his year-end stuff in order, and it doesn't sound scary to me at all. It sounds like a good thing, but of course you'll want to check it out with your tax advisor.
All righty. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling the show. Happy New Year. 17 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. Rachel joins us on the line from Tucker. Hey, Rachel. Rachel, you with us?
Hi, yes.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
Thanks. How can I help today?
I was calling in regards to a letter or statement that I got in there. My husband and I just recently, or a few months ago, refinanced our house, and we're getting a similar statement in the mail for the second time, and I wasn't sure if it was actually worth doing. And the only reason why I was inquiring about it is because I mentioned something about a return in premium. It's called a mortgage, life, and disability coverage.
Okay.
And it's supposed to cover just in case if there's death or disability or critical illness. And then if we don't use any of our funds or any of our benefits, then 100% of our premiums will be returned to us at the end of our policy term. And the only reason why I was inquiring about it is because I myself have short-term and long-term disability. However, my husband does not. And I was wondering if it's similar in monthly cost for short-term or long-term disability, would this be beneficial to get for our house?
All right. Well, I'm so glad you called about this, because this is one of my pet peeves.
Mm-hmm.
So mortgage, life, and disability coverage, what it is as you've described, if you die or if you get injured, it'll kick in some money for your payments. What I don't like about it is it tends to be really expensive, and you're paying more for a declining liability, right? Because every month you pay on your mortgage payment, and you reduce the amount that you owe, the balance, and so there's less and less for you to worry about.
Mm-hmm.
But I find that it's really expensive. And so the question that you have to ask yourself is, do you have enough in disability coverage already that if you're disabled, you'll still be able to make your payments? If the answer is yes, I would much prefer that you guys use this money and buy term life insurance. Term life insurance is so much better, because if you die and you want to keep the mortgage, like maybe you have a mortgage at 4% or 3.25%, why would you ever want to pay that off?
Mm-hmm.
So this money would only pay that off, whereas if you had a term life policy, you could decide whatever you wanted to do with it. So mm-hmm. the best thing you could do, in my mind, is buy more term life insurance.
Okay, so term life can be used outside of death?
No, it cannot be used outside of death, but you already have short and long-term disability.
That's for myself, and my husband does not have short-term or long-term disability.
But I assume that if something happened to him, you would keep working.
Yes, I would, but his half of the income would be gone.
Right. So it's probably cheaper for him to buy a disability policy.
Okay.
Where it would cover for that than to buy this.
Okay.
Because there would be other costs associated with him becoming disabled. And you would want to not just pay off the mortgage, you would want other income coming in and then decide how to use it. So I would much prefer that if he needs disability coverage, to buy disability coverage. And if not, I would prefer that you both buy term life insurance over spending money on this. This is one of my least favorite types of insurance.
Okay. Yes, both of us do. We both do have life insurance, term life insurance.
Okay. Well, this would be, I would, again, put the money towards a disability policy for him.
Okay.
So that he could replace 60 or 70% of his income.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think you would be better. That would just provide a better service. You can look at it and compare, but I would not just use this. I would go do a full search and see how much, you know, you'd have to pay, what's out there. You know, just because somebody sent you something, I would talk to the people who currently offer you your different insurance policies. I would go look online and search out at insure.com. If you're really going to do it, that's where I would do it. But I would do all that research and look for a good disability policy instead. 404-872-0750, 21 minutes past the hour. I'm Elise Klink. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
27 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Klink sitting in for Clark. I don't know if you've checked out the Equifax Finance blog, but this is a blog full of money experts that I edit. I also contribute to it at Equifax.com. But you also might want to check out what we've been doing over at MoneyWatch.com. CBS Money Watch now lives on the CBS News site, and we've been blogging all month about different celebrities and Christmas stuff, great Christmas decorations. If you've got a photo that shows a house that's been done up to the max, I would love to see it. We've been posting those all month. It's just been so much fun. We talked about Ellen DeGeneres and Portia de Rossi and what they're buying and all the rest. So MoneyWatch.com, and then for really hardcore information that you can use to improve your personal finances in 2012, you definitely want to go over to MoneyWatch.com and check out the links there. We have stock market up about 114 points. The news today was good for housing stocks. Home improvement companies and mortgage lenders all trading higher, buoyed by a report showing that the number of Americans who put down contracts for a house had risen in November to the highest level in a year and a half. So the index of sales agreements jumped about 7.3%. to a reading just over 100, and a reading of 100 is considered healthy. The last time the index was that high was in April of 2010, one more month before the federal tax credits expired. So that's actually great. One problem that we're seeing is that these sales are falling apart at a far higher rate than ever. But at least it was a little bit of good news, and the stock market has responded. 404-872-0750. When we come back, take more of your calls here on News Talk WSB.
Every Sunday, Elise Klink is live and new to guide you through your money and real estate questions. Only on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Clark Howard Show. Thanks for joining me here today. I'm Elise Klink. Can't believe it. We're at the end of another year. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Online all the time, thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com. Before we get to your calls, I just received the latest scam alert from the Internet Crime Complaint Center, IC3, for today. And the report is based on information from law enforcement and complaints submitted to the IC3, and it details recent cybercrime trends, new twists to previously existing cyber scams and announcements. And earlier in the show, we were talking about a Red Bull scam where they try to get you to, it's like, we've selected you to put Red Bull ads on your car, and we'll pay you, just give us, you know, your bank account number. But what was interesting is this, is that today's scam alert talks about an article that was written detailing popular passwords. And it's from an internet site that manages passwords, and it talks about the lack of secure passwords being utilized and how that may be a factor in data breaches, past, present, and future. And one reason for the lack of security, and I totally identify with this, is the number of passwords a user is required to remember to access the many databases, applications, multiple networks used on a daily basis. And sharing passwords among users in a workplace is becoming a common theme to continue the flow of operations. So this, what's happening is basically people are prioritizing convenience over security when it comes to establishing passwords, and that's making it really easy for code breakers and hackers to get into systems. So here are the here are the 25 most common passwords, and I was looking at this list thinking, ooh, I need to change some passwords, I think, and I'm sure you will as well. So the number one, I'm going to provide these with the number one used password to the 25th most used password. Number one is the word password. So people just leave password at P-A-S-S-W-R-D. They don't even try and switch it around. That's the number one most common password. Number two, 123456. Oh, really? And number three is 123456789 when you actually have to have 8 digits. Fourth is QWERTY, the keyboard, Q-W-E-R-T-Y. Number five is ABC123, not too tricky. Six is monkey. I just saw a whole bunch of monkeys in Costa Rica. Number seven, 1234567. I just can't even believe this. Number eight, let me in. That was the one we used. We didn't use it, but that was years ago when we first set up our website, and we were on a test basis. It wasn't live yet. We let me in was the password. Number nine, trust no one. T-R-U-S-T-N-O-1, number one. Number 10 is dragon. Number 11 is baseball. Number 12, this is great, 11-11-11. 13, this one's sort of sweet, I love you, one word. 14, master. 15, sunshine. 16 is Ashley. A lot of kids named Ashley? Don't know. 17 is Bailey. 18 is password, but the O in password is a zero as opposed to an O. 19 is shadow. 20 is 123123. 21 is 654321. Somebody got clever there. And 22 is Superman. And this one is the one that confuses me most. Number 23, most used password is QAZWSX. I'm not sure what that is. Cause Wessex. I don't know. 24 is Michael. My son's name is Michael. 25 is football. I'm going to take the list and I'm going to post it over at thinklink.com. And then the other thing that happened is on November 28th, Cyber Monday, they were reporting that the Department of Homeland Security announced 150 website domain names were seized by the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement Homeland Security Division, the National Intellectual Property Rights Coordination Center, the Department of Justice, and the FBI Washington Field Office. These domains were illegally selling and distributing counterfeit merchandise, and the seized domains are now in the custody of the federal government. If you go to these sites, you're going to find some sort of banner or something indicating it's been seized by federal authorities. And you can get the link there as well. So if you don't get these updates, these scam alerts, anybody can get them in the public. You can go to the Internet Crime Complaint Center, IC3, and it's ic3.gov, and it will give you access to all of this, and it'll just come in, and you'll be staying on top of Internet security. 404-872-0750, 41 minutes past the hour. Let's go back to the phones. Kim joins us on the line from Cumming. Hi, Kim.
Hey, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Happy New Year.
Same to you.
Thanks. What's on your mind?
We are in a position where we desperately need to move, but we tried to sell our house. It didn't sell for a year and a half, so we took it off the market. We owe slightly more than it's worth, so we can't refinance. We're not allowed to have renters in the neighborhood. My husband and I both have excellent credit. We both have very secure jobs.
Why do you have to move?
It's a situation to keep my child in a school that he needs to be in.
Mm-hmm.
And the situation, we sort of had an agreement worked out to get him to school, and that's no longer an option. And he needs to be in that school.
Okay.
So we need to move to get closer to the school because I no longer have a transportation option for him.
Okay.
And it's about a 55-mile drive from my house.
Wow. That's a long way to go.
Yes.
You're in a tough place. the refinancing wouldn't help you, although there is a new government program that you might qualify for. You can't rent. They're not going to give you an exception in your subdivision?
No, there's already too many rental properties.
Okay.
It's actually already, it's exceeded the number that was allowed.
Okay, and they don't want to make an exception?
No.
Okay. So if is your house worth less than the mortgage amount? Are you underwater?
Just a little bit. We haven't had it appraised lately, but a house that's very, very similar to mine, that they got a contract on it for around $226. The appraisal came back at $189, so they weren't able to sell. We owe $201. It's like $201.5 right now.
Okay.
The difference between my house and that house is we've put in all new flooring. We put in stainless steel appliances. We had the inside and outside painted. We did a lot to get it ready to sell.
Yep.
It didn't work. We know we're not going to get any of that money back. We're just not. And I haven't been inside the home that appraised for $189, but the agent that we talked to said the fact that we had it painted and, you know, put in better appliances is not really going to raise it that much.
No, but it might make it sell faster. So the idea is you want to be priced competitively but look better than everybody else.
Yeah,
that's
like I said, we owe about $201. If you add on commission for an agent and then the three agents that I've met with recently when we were thinking about putting it back on the market said everybody wants you to pay closing costs for them. We're also worried about it not appraising for enough for us to even break even.
No, so you won't break even. I can't see you breaking even. I mean, if the homes are appraising for $189 and you owe $201, what did you pay for the house?
$285.
So you know you're not going to get $285.
No. I'm just talking about being able to walk away with not having to bring more than, you know, say $5,000 to the table just to get out of the house.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen. My guess is you'll probably owe about $15,000 to $20,000 when you're all done, because you've got commission and you've got transfer taxes, and if you have to pay some closing costs for people, you know, and the appraisal comes in, you're going to have to pay the difference between, you know, you're going to have to pay off the house itself. They probably will come in at, if the appraisal is $189, that's what they're going to want to pay for the property, because otherwise they won't qualify for the mortgage.
Yeah.
So that's another, you know,
$11.
So my sense is you're probably going to have to cough up about $20 to walk away.
Which we don't have.
Okay. Well.
I know I'm calling you with a pretty much impossible situation, but I was just hoping you had some magic solution.
I wish I did have a magic solution. I mean, this is a case, you know, my feeling is kids come first, right? So
yeah.
If you tell me that your son has to go to the school and it's 55 miles away and there's no other option to get him there, like hiring a van or anything else, or if that's out of your means, then you have to sell. So then it's 401k money or Roth IRA, tapping out those. It's borrowing $20,000 from family members if they have it, even if you pay a low interest loan just to get out. Those are going to be your options.
Yeah, we thought about all that too.
Any of that possible?
Can you
raise the money in a couple of different places, like maybe $10,000 from the 401k and $10,000 from somewhere else?
I do have enough in stocks that I could sell it right now and come up with probably 18 to 20.
Okay.
I could, you know, that was the money we were going to use for a down payment to buy something else, so.
Okay, but so you're just making the investment in your child and not in yourself. This is, you know, you started out this conversation telling me your son has to go to this school. I get that. You know, whatever issues or whatever is making you make that choice, everything else has to come second. And as a mom, I totally understand it, and I'm supporting you in it. So owning another house, that'll happen someday. You know, you'll move to this place. You'll absorb the loss. You'll start saving again. Maybe you'll end up buying an FHA foreclosure, also known as a HUD home, where you have to put only down $100. Right? So you may not need that $20,000 that you have identified. And that's just the price you're going to pay for having to sell in a place. Now, are you going to be 55 miles away from your job?
No, it'll put me about 30 miles away, which is, I live about 25 now, so moving closer to the school doesn't
change things for you.
No.
What about your husband?
Actually, it puts him a little closer to his work.
Okay. So you make it up in time saved. You will figure out another way to save money. You'll live cheaply for a year, and you'll put away as much as you can. And you may find a HUD home that you love that only costs you $100 to get in or $1,000 to get in, and find that in 3 or 4 months you've got that money back. I don't think you should. You know, this is a huge loss to go from a house you paid $285,000 to you only owe $200. Clearly, you guys did everything right the first time, and you're getting slapped on the hand for it. And that's horrible, but reality is reality. And, you know, as you know from listening to me and listening to my show that, you know, let's just try and find the easiest way out. And if somebody can buy your house and it qualifies, let's say, for $194 instead of $189, you know, so you won't use $20, maybe you'll use $16.
Yeah, the only other question, because, I mean, everything you're saying makes sense. It's just a matter of biting the bullet and
sure.
going ahead and doing it. As far as selling the house, are there any options, like, or do you know of any possibilities where we could sell our house and maybe not pay commission on the house we're selling, but let the agent have 100% of the commission on the house we're buying? Is that ever a possibility?
Well, the problem, okay, it may be, but the problem is that the agent that you are, that you would use to buy a home 30, 40 miles away is not going to be the same agent. So it just wouldn't happen. And you wouldn't get 100%. They wouldn't be able to get 100% of the commission because they share it with the broker and they share it with the selling agent. So it doesn't generally work that way.
Yeah, that's true.
You could try and sell it yourself, but honestly, I wouldn't recommend it. Not in this kind of a marketplace.
No, there's too much competition. We would have to have it.
Yeah, what you need is the most aggressive agent who's going to do absolutely everything for you to get the highest price possible. And, you know, we'll work with the appraiser to make sure that they understand what is selling in the house, in the neighborhoods, and all the rest.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I had a magic bullet for you. I really do.
So do I.
Oh. Will you let me know what happens?
I will. I absolutely will. I appreciate your time and input.
If I can help any further, I will try and put something up on the blog and website and talk about it on the weekends.
Excellent. I'll check that. Thank you.
Take care, Kim.
Bye-bye.
50 minutes past the hour. If I could have a magic bullet for some of the callers, I would have used one with Kim. I really would. 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Link. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more on News Talk WSB.
Expert money advice you can depend on. Weekdays with Clark Howard and Dave Ramsey. And midday every Sunday with Elise Glink on AM 750. And now, 95.5 FM. News Talk WSB.
Where you can stay.
Seven minutes past the hour. News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Kling, filling in for Clark today. So glad you could join us here on News Talk WSB. So we've had some tweets since the beginning when we were talking about how you could talk to your cable company and talk them down off the ledge and get a discount for your trouble, which is kind of nice. Paul tweeted that it's called empowerment, and it's a cruel fact that some companies don't empower their employees to satisfy customers, which is, I think, completely true. I wish that more companies, and this is maybe one of my wishes for 2012, more companies would take the time to empower people who have customer service experience and are on that front line to actually help them make customers happy. It would be so great if they actually did that. It'd just be amazing. I'm finding, and one thing that's been great about 2011, as we've moved in to the year, social media has become a customer service platform, almost a premier platform. Companies are spending money, big bucks, to hire people who are knowledgeable about social media and can actually respond to people and help things out. So if you're having trouble with a company, head to Twitter, Facebook. These are great places to go and have your complaint heard and acted on. 58 minutes past the hour on the Clark Howard Show, 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Glink. Be back with more on News Talk WSB.